listening to Beer Talk Today with your hosts Kyle Brown, Matt Lang, and John Nadler. That's right, it's Beer Talk Today, and John isn't here. It's just Kyle and I. How are you doing, Kyle?
Doing great.
We've got a great show lined up for you, including interview with Chris Colby, the editor of BYO Magazine, which is probably the preeminent homebrew magazine. It's the one at least they sell at wine and hop shops. It's the one that I read sometimes. But he wrote what is probably the authoritative article on the hop shortage, and interviewed him about a month ago about that, and finally we're going to get a chance to play it. We had the Oktoberfest show and then the New Glarus show, and then we were absent last week, so it's the first chance we've gotten to play it. It's a really great interview on sort of the current state of finances in the brewing industry and stuff. But before we get into that, we're going to do a little news in 60 seconds. But John, who usually runs that segment, like we said, is absent, visiting family. So I think Kyle's going to take it over today.
Yes, I am. No, big shoes to fill. not because John has big feet. I think he's a size 9.
I don't know.
9 and a half.
I don't know how you. Myself. I don't know why you know.
I don't. You know, I've worn his shoes once or twice. But okay. You know, so I'm gonna go beer in 90 seconds.
90 seconds. You don't know if you can get your time down.
I really don't have that much to say, I guess. But you know, I also did take part of some of the homecoming festivities today. So
okay, so you're a little sluggish.
You know, sluggish or
sluggish is good.
That's
we'll say sluggish.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think we'll go. All right. You ready to go?
Bring it on.
All right, go.
All right, everyone. Forget the current polls. This political season, it's all about what Joe the Plumber thinks. And the true way to determine what the political candidates are and where they're going to be is all about the World Beer Company. They have gift baskets based on beers that correlate to each individual political candidate. Obama's going to have beers such as Coma Longboard from Hawaii, based off of where he's from, and also Goose Island from Illinois, from where he represents. McCain, on the other hand, is going to have Elephant Beer, the party figure of his choice, and also Old Speckle Hen, because he is very, very old. So, on top of that, they also have...
I think he also has British background.
But you're killing my time, man.
Sorry.
Yes. Also, they also have beers going back to their political vice presidential candidates. So there's also many more from there to choose from. Moving on from there, Zima is done. The beer that debuted in 1994 from Coors did very well, but was quickly overtaken by other flavored liqueurs, such as flavored lemonades. MillerCoors reports that they have stopped due because of challenging sales and also declining consumer interest. Finally, the Beer versus Cancer showdown has finally hit us. Rice University in Houston has found that some generic engineering with beer has been able to include resveratrol, which is the chemical component that has been found to reduce cancer-causing agents. UW, back here in Madison, has determined several months ago that resveratrol is actually the key component to the French paradox, and that is in quotes, that it actually the French paradox is drinking a glass of wine a day will help reduce cancer. So that's helped to reduce that. Has beer news.
Beer news in 110 seconds.
Oh God,
so it's close.
That's terrible.
That's good. I interrupted you, though. I'm sorry.
I was a rambler.
Yeah.
That's all right.
No. Old Speckled Hen is dual meaning, I think. He has British heritage, I think, and then obviously he is an Old Speckled Hen himself. I think that was the...
Yeah, I'm going to go just a...
Yeah. But I think that was a fun idea. You know, there's other ones. I know that... I think it was Jones Soda Company or some soda company was doing one like that, too.
Yeah.
There's like a blue and a red... And, yeah, the beer gift baskets. And in that poll, McCain was up 51-49, although I think the quality of the beer was definitely better in Obama's basket. He had the Kona. Mm-hmm. He had Goose Island. He had Left Hand.
Left Hand Pilsner, yep.
It's the Salvation.
The Sam Adams Boston Lager.
Yeah.
Very classic Boston Lager.
And then McCain had, like, Carlsberg Elephant, and they had Budweiser because his wife owns some Budweiser distributorships or something
like
that.
You know, they also had the Rogue American Ale because McCain's a maverick.
That's right. That was that. Perfect.
But
that's,
you know,
a good beer.
And actually, it got even more fun with that, too, with the vice presidential edition basket that they had. With McCain's side, with Sarah Palin coming from Alaska, they had the moose head.
Sure.
Because, you know, she hunts moose up there.
With her bare hands, I hear.
Yeah. And Sea Dog for her involvement with the fishing industry. And also Red Stripe. And it said, hooray beer. And I didn't really... That one I didn't.
Maybe because she was a pageant. You know, Red Stripe kind of has like the sash.
Like, yeah, the little sash.
So she used to be Miss Alaska or whatever.
That could be. And then as far as on the other side, they included Dogfish, Rolling Rock, and Victory, kind of all on the East Coast.
For Biden?
Yeah, Rolling Rock and Victory, both of the birthplace of the same state.
Yeah, so. Pennsylvania, sure, sure. And he represents Delaware, so that'd be Dogfish Head.
That would be it.
Okay. Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
I just figured it was East Coast.
Good, yeah.
Zima.
Zima's gone.
It's gone.
You know, I've never had Zima.
I haven't either, and I'm really glad it's gone.
Yeah.
I am going to have to reformulate. My favorite pickup line is, "Hello, ma'am, can I buy you a Zima?"
Yeah.
So, yeah. Probably have to be like,
"Hello, ma'am, can I buy you a Strongbow?"
Or a Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Mike's Hard.
So.
Yeah. Fermented malt, flavored malt beverages.
The big one, which could have a significant impact on everyone's lives, is the beer versus cancer showdown.
Yeah, do you think the commercial breweries will start adding resveratrol or whatever it is?
You know, like, when, I don't know how long ago it was, but let's say it was 8 years ago, people started, you know, very health conscious on vitamins, minerals, that kind of balance, and every orange juice you buy said with calcium.
Sure, so, vitamin D added to milk, all that
so
stuff.
So I can't imagine that Budweiser wouldn't suddenly say, Bud Light, low calories, but with resveratrol, you know.
Maybe, or Michelob Ultra with resveratrol.
You never know.
I don't know if I see it catching on in craft beer, but yeah. It's interesting.
It really, and you know, there that is the French paradox, as they called it, really is such an old concept.
Sure, and they've been saying that for a long time. A couple glasses of red wine will help your heart, whatever.
At one point I talked to my doctor, and he said, you know, 1 to 2 beers a day is perfectly good for you.
It is.
It's a good, so, and I've doctor's orders.
Yeah, of course. Can't say no to that.
So I think that's pretty fun. And I mean, if they're really finding some significant stuff to this, this could really change, you know, the future of beer, especially with what genetic engineering is able to do right now. If they are able, I don't exactly know what resveratrol
if
is
they can
from.
Just like a powder they can
yeah,
just add,
like,
I don't know.
Is it like, you know, add red food coloring number 7 or something?
Yeah,
or
I don't know.
Or is it like a chemical process or a brewing aspect? So that'll be really interesting to see where that develops.
Yeah.
We'll try to track that one.
Well, I bet there has been beers with resveratrol. What about like Midas Touch or New Glarus's Berliner Weiss that had grapes in them?
Yeah, I mean,
maybe
that's a good point.
Maybe we just need to drink a lot of Berliner Weiss.
But is it from the grapes? Is it from the actual brewing?
I guess I don't know.
Yeah. Either way, I'll pass my doctor's prescription on to you all. 2 beers a day.
Yeah.
May not keep the doctor away, but he'll put a smile on your face.
That's true. So. And it's good. It's perfectly good for you. That's what they say. 2 is good. 3 is bad. That's what
I heard. Good for the mind is good for the soul.
That's true. All right. Well, I think that's it for beer news in 60 seconds. We'll go to the clip interview with Chris Colby from BYO Magazine and all about the hop shortage. So I'm here today with Chris Colby, editor of BYO Magazine, which is probably the preeminent homebrew magazine out there. Thanks for talking to me today, Chris.
Thanks for having me on.
So, first of all, congratulations. As I was doing some background research for this, I typed in the words hop shortage in Google, and your BYO article was the first one to pop up. So,
yeah, I saw that the other day.
you've written the authoritative article, according to the internet. So, first off, for many of my listeners may not be as intimately aware of the hop shortage and exactly what's going on. So what exactly does the term hop shortage mean? What exactly is going on out there?
Well, hops, as you know, are one of the four main ingredients in beer. You know, they provide the bitterness and the spice. And these are, you know, plants that are grown usually around the 50th parallel. You know, in the United States, it's Yakima, Washington. It used to be New York, you know, and over in Europe, it's in Germany. And anyway, what happened recently is back in, I think it was 91, worldwide hop acreage hit a maximum. It was somewhere over 200,000 acres. There was a big hop surplus that year. And one of the things about hops is that they can be converted into extract, which is just it's basically a liquid form of alpha acids. And this is very, very stable. So that year, you know, a lot of the excess hops that didn't get used in brewing that year were converted into extract and stored. And over the next several years, up through about 2007, you know, there was still this you know, floating bit extract out there that, you know, every year, some of it got sold, but every year, you know, more of it sort of got added to the pile too, you know, when they had good years.
Okay.
And so hops were for, you know, for basically from 1991 through 2007, hops were very cheap. They were, in some years, farmers were getting actually less for their hops than they, you know, it cost them to produce them. So anyway, in 2007, when the shortage arose, what happened is year after year, hop acreage had been declining because farmers weren't getting much for it, so they'd pull up their hop acreage and convert it to something else. And eventually in 2007, the sort of floating pool of extract dried up, and brewers took a look around and they realized that there was fewer acres of hops planted worldwide than it would take to supply the brewing industry for that year.
Okay.
So that, in the sort of nutshell, that's the hop shortage. There was a gross excess for a while in storage. The means to produce it shriveled because there was no, you know, it wasn't a very profitable thing to do. And then when the excess dried up, we were left with a shortage.
Okay. And so those are sort of the underlying causes of the shortage. Was there anything else short term that sort of led to this situation we have?
Oh, there's a number of other different factors, yeah. I mean, one thing, China and some of the emerging third world countries are, you know, their economies are improving. They're getting more economically powerful, and as people have, you know, more money in their pocket, they want to spend it on beer.
Sure.
So, you know, a billion Chinese people who, you know, suddenly want to buy beer, that's, you know, that's going to require some more hops. And I mean, China has their own hop fields, but they're a net importer of hops. And, you know, same with some other developing countries. So there's more demand for that. The decline of the dollar versus the euro played a big role. When hop prices started going up, a lot of European brewers simply stepped in and paid the premium for hops as the price rose, and that left U.S. brewers out in the cold because they couldn't afford to. And, you know, there's some other minor inputs too. Like 2007, that year wasn't a particularly good growing season. So it was sort of, you know, Ralph Olson of Hop Union called it sort of the perfect storm. Like every sort of bad influence hit all at once.
Okay.
But, you know, the main input to it was just the fact that hops had been cheap for so long, and the acreage had shrunk to the point where it was, you know, below enough to produce enough hops every year.
Okay. Yeah, because a lot of stories I've read, other than the one you wrote about this sort of talk about the hop shortage, oftentimes they're focused on what individual breweries are doing in response to it, and they sort of have like the one paragraph summary of what's happened. And a lot of times they cite what you kind of said about it was a bad year of weather for, you know, there's bad weather in Germany or something like that, and there was like a fire at like, you know, a warehouse in Washington and stuff. But that didn't seem like enough of a reason for it to be like this big of a shortage. So I'm glad
there was a warehouse fire in Yakima that burned. I forget, it was when you heard the amount of pounds of hops, it was a lot.
Yeah.
But when you stack it up next to the worldwide hop usage every year, it was trivial. And
not enough to affect it.
That in itself didn't bring out the whole shortage.
Absolutely.
And likewise, the growing year wasn't particularly good, but had the acreage been there, you know, at a sustainable level, you know, it would have been just that hop prices went up a little bit, not to the degree they did, not from, you know, $2 to $3 a pound to, you know, last year they rose to over $20 a pound, and this year they're over $30 a pound.
That's crazy. And then, a lot of people have been saying 2009 is going to be worse and it's just going to keep getting worse. Is that something, a trend that you've been seeing that you think is going to happen?
This year, the 2008 harvest is in. They added acreage, you know, hop farmers around the world added acreage both in 2007 and 2008, but it's still going to be pretty bad this year.
Yeah.
Hard to tell if it's going to be worse than last year. You know, that's just something that we'll see. I sort of think it's going to be. I mean, I think last year a lot of people you know, dug deep into older hop reserves, and they, you know, sort of wheeled and dealed with everyone they could and to get hops from every, you know, possible location. And I sort of think this year it's going to be harder. There's going to be less sort of surprise finds of, you know, oh, I've found these hops in the back of my, you know, storage room that are still usable, you know.
Sure, and like the Sam Adams helping people out, obviously that can't last forever.
Yeah, Sam Adams gave up, or they sold 20,000 pounds of their hops that they had bought, and they sold them at their cost. So, yeah, that's not going to happen again.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's hard to say. There's a few more hops on the market now, but I think everyone's antenna is up, and they're, you know, searching them out. So I think this year, you know, I don't know if it's going to be drastically worse than last year, but I sort of think, and this is, you know, half hunch and half based on information, that this year is going to be fairly difficult. And from what my sources tell me is, you know, they're also adding more hop acreage this year, and that the acreage they've added in the last two is going to be suddenly more productive, because it usually takes for hops to, you know, hops to come into full sort of fruition.
Sure. I've heard 2 years, right? Isn't that usually?
Yeah. Two is a good guess for the U.S. That's how it usually happens, because we've got a little bit drier climate.
Sure.
And in Europe, it's sometimes 3 to 4, depending on. But anyway, I heard next year, bittering hops, or like alpha hops, you know, the high alpha hops are going to be back to sort of a stabilized level. You know, there's going to be enough for everybody.
Okay.
And the prices should come down somewhat. And then the year after that, although this is a little more speculative, I think the year after that, the aroma acreage, you know, the hops that are used, not so much for bittering the beer, but for giving, you know, the nice hoppy floral aromas. They think, you know, in 2010, those should be sort of stabilized, and prices will come down, you know, somewhat.
Okay.
Not to 2006 levels, but, you know, because those were artificially depressed, but, you know, they'll be down much below the, you know, levels now, which are driven by, you know, just a shortage, and last year, frankly, by panic among brewers.
Yeah.
So, that's what I've heard.
Okay, so it's not all doom and gloom. It's not all going to be like, you know, we're not going to be able to brew the beers the way we had before. You think the aroma hops and stuff for craft brewers will be there. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, everything's... Well, I mean, there's a few varieties that are never going to come back, but just because they've been squeezed out and they don't have the... But, you know, for the most part, those were, you know, not very popular ones. The ones that, you know, the ones that are popular among craft brewers and get used a lot, you know, those are going to come back. I mean, simple economics is going to drive them back into production, because, you know, right now they're virtually impossible to find, and when you do, they're expensive. And, you know, so for a hop grower that's, you know, say he's got a full field full of alpha hops and he's doing well, you know, in the coming years, he's going to be thinking, well, aroma hops are still high in price. I'm going to, you know, add some acreage there.
Okay.
And so it's just going to be, you know, it's just going to be something that, you know, for alpha hops, we should in about a year. For aroma hops, probably a year. Probably 2 years.
Okay. Yeah, because we talked to Larry Bell a few weeks back when he was here for the Great Taste of the Midwest, and he had said that he was in Yakima, and it was a little bit more difficult to convince those guys to start planting those low alpha hops as opposed to the high alpha hops, because, you know, you can get more alpha per acreage, obviously, with the high alpha hops. But I've also noticed that there's places outside of Yakima have started growing hops. There's a place out in Cross Plains, Wisconsin, which is about 45 minutes from where I am, that they just started a hop farm. And you don't think of Wisconsin as a hop growing location. But do you think there's going to be more of that going on with people sort of outside Yakima Valley growing their own hops to respond to this?
Well, like I said earlier, hops jumped from, you know, $2 to $3 a pound to $20 to $30, you know, now they're over $30 a pound. So people are, you know, people with farmland are noticing that. And I think, you know, I think, yeah, we are going to see, you know, some hop yards springing up in some places. And Wisconsin, as far as I know, which isn't very far in this regard, but I'm not sure if that ever was a traditional hop growing region, but it's certainly on the right, you know, parallel.
Sure.
And I'm sure it would be, you know, that the climate there is right and the day length should be right to grow hops.
Yeah, from what I read somewhere, and I'm not going to be able to cite my source on this, but that there used to be quite a bit of hops here. I'm talking like the 1850s, 60s, 70s. And then there was
very well could be.
Then there was some kind of blight that came through and just like destroyed all the crops.
I'm not sure about Wisconsin, but I know that's what happened to the New York. And it might have been an extension of the same thing. New York used to have an extensive, and New England had extensive hop fields. And there was a, I'm forgetting which blight it was, if it was like downy mildew or powdery mildew or something, and it just really went nuts and basically wiped out the industry there.
Yeah.
So Yakima, you know, thrived because they were free from that.
Yeah. And that's
one thing to follow up sort of a little bit on what Larry Bell said about convincing growers to plant aroma hops. Aroma hops are low alpha hops. And right now, growers are getting paid for alpha levels.
Yeah.
And growing aroma hops is actually a double kick in the pants because most high alpha hops are newer varieties that also have better agronomic properties. So not only are they higher alpha acids, but they're yielding more hops per acre. So you've got something that maybe yields 16% alpha acids. And say 4,000 tons per acre if you're growing a high alpha crop. But if you grow an aroma crop, something that might be yielding, 4% alpha acid, so four times less, and then maybe only a fourth of the yield, like say, 1,000 tons an acre. So it's like a 16-fold decrease in what you could get paid for.
Sure.
So of course it's hard to get the farmers to do that. It's like, why don't you plant this crop that's 16 times less, I mean, number 16 itself is made up, but the basic idea is, there's less alpha and there's less yield together.
Yeah.
So, but the flip side of that, of course, is that people are going to be paying a premium for aroma hops because you can't, there are a lot of the classic aroma varieties that you just can't really do without. And, they'll come around in a couple of years.
All right. Well, that's good. I'm glad it's not all doom and gloom scenario. We're not going to have any hops and we're going to have to make gruit all the time or anything like that.
No. Yeah. The worst case scenarios, when the crisis first hit, you heard a lot of people saying, there won't be any IPAs on the shelves at all. And homebrewers will be stuck brewing, gruit. And some guy was on one board I read was he was going to experiment brewing with cow bile, and I was just like, oh Jesus, it's not going to come to that.
That's good.
There'll be hops. It's just that you'll when you go to your homebrew store, they're not going to have the 70 varieties they used to have. They'll have 20, and it'll cost more, but they're not going to disappear completely.
Well, that's good. And then you had mentioned earlier, I want to return, you said something about that some varieties might be disappearing. What varieties do you think are in danger of going away?
From what I've heard, and this is all speculation, not anything written in stone, but there's some of the biggest declines in acreage in farming have been over in England.
Okay.
And from what I hear there, there's a real premium on land. You can, as a farmer who's in the hop trade, can get a lot of money selling to developers.
Sure.
And, in the past few years, they certainly weren't getting money from growing hops. So there was a big decline in English acreage. And I've heard that some hops, I've heard like bullion mentioned.
Oh.
Although nobody really uses bullion anymore.
Sure.
A few of the sort of esoteric English varieties might not come back. But certainly... we would expect the East Kent Golding and Fuggles and the ones that you really think of when you think of as English hops, those aren't going to disappear.
Okay.
But some marginal ones, and I'm sure some of the, if you were using a weird experimental aroma hop, and it was just starting to gain traction back in, 2005, 2006, it might have got shoved to the side right now, but...
Okay.
For the most part, I think everything everything we really need is going to come back. You know, there might be a few odd varieties here or there, especially European ones that sort of never recover in acreage. But, you know, most varieties will be back.
Okay, so yeah, all the big ones, the Cascade, the Amarillo, Centennial, that stuff, there's no risk of that just being, like, going
no.
away.
No.
Well, that's good.
Cascade is going to be an interesting one to watch, though. Anheuser-Busch just rolled out a new pale ale.
The American ale?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that.
And that's supposedly Cascade, so you've got the biggest brewer in the world suddenly rolling out a major product using Cascade, and so Cascade might be, you know, because I'm assuming they've contracted for all that. So Cascade might be a little bit scarce.
Okay. Because the big
again,
boys are getting
you know, people use a lot of Cascade. They like it. Maybe, you know, fingers crossed, hopefully, farmers have, you know, kept as much as they can and have planted new new acreages of that.
Okay.
I hope so. I love Cascade, so.
Yeah, that's sort of the hop that I use all the time in pale ales and stuff. I'd be very disappointed if I couldn't get any.
Yeah, it's been hard to find this year, but yeah. Not impossible.
No, I've been able to find a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, initially what we heard was real doom and gloom. Like, when I wrote the article, we were pretty much hearing that it was just, you know, don't ever think about finding it this year. But it sort of creeped back. There was some places found some outlets for it, so.
Yeah, and I think I found some at the homebrew shop that maybe wasn't the most fresh, but it was still Cascade, so, you know.
Yeah, that's another thing. I think some homebrew shops, I think, got rid of some old stocks that, you know, which is fine if they would have labeled it as such. But, I mean, I heard some people saying that they bought hops and they got them home and they're sort of, you know, these brown pellets. And it's like, no, that's not so good.
Yuck.